This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929 ESPN. You can always listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM ESPN, or 680 AM. But you can stay up to date with everything happening here at the station. Stream anytime, anywhere, live on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. All you got to do is search for 92.9 FM ESPN. Subscribe right there. It's free to subscribe, and you can listen to us anytime, anywhere, on demand. Dennis Fuller and George Ruggiero are producing the program for us. Glad that they are with us. George will be with us running solo behind the board tomorrow. Looking forward to that. My co-host, as he is each and every Tuesday, he is, of course, the host of VSiN Primetime, the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast, episodes available each and every week. Also, make sure you check out the best pregame show in all of the land. It's the VSiN College Football Betting Tailgate Show, airing live Saturday, 9 a.m. Central Time on Twitter, on X, at 1TimMurray. Tim, good day, sir.
Well, that was a lovely introduction, sir. And, you know, college game day, big noon kickoff, as
I stole it from your boy, Yamans, who I love.
As Coach Prime said, we coming, you know.
We coming, yeah.
We coming for you.
Phrasic. But,
yeah, man, it's been a fun show. It was a bit of a frustrating Saturday, which I'm sure we'll get into. Wasn't catastrophic by any stretch, because once again, we only care about our bets. But no, it's I know you've got some thoughts, but it is shaping up to be quite the fascinating year, and in the first year of the college football playoff expansion, we've got a whole lot of options out there, including the Memphis Tigers. I don't think they're out of it just yet, ladies and gentlemen. Just saying.
I don't think they're out of it. Boise,
based off of the odds there.
Yeah, you know, I don't think they're out of it. I think the problem that Memphis fans have right now is if you could have capped off the Navy comeback, despite the fact that Boise has passed the eye test with flying colors, if you could have just not thrown the interception, you beat Navy, you realize that it really was there for the taking.
Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah, I mean,
I think that's the frustration fans have.
They will definitely be kicking themselves about the Navy result. Beating North Texas is a solid win. You know,
especially in the fashion, because I told you I had legitimate concerns if they got into the style of game that game got into, how would Memphis handle it? And they controlled the game. So I was impressed by it.
Look, it boils down to, it's not this simple, and I didn't plan on starting the show this way, but if Boise State loses Friday night, that is very, very good news. That is a huge game. I was texting with a buddy of mine because I'm going to the game on Friday night. And by the way, UNLV hosts Boise State, for those unaware.
Is this your boy's first game?
Who?
Is this your son's first college football game?
Oh, my son's not coming to this game.
I thought you said you were taking him. My bad.
No. I was talking to my boy.
Okay.
I guess I should be clarified. My boy, a.k.a. friend, not my boy, as in my child. I did take my son to a UNLV game last year.
The late night games are tough.
Yeah, no way. No way. And let's just say I'm dropping a couple bucks on this game, and we're in a suite, and there's going to be lots of beverages and whatnot. So,
respect.
Yeah, we're gonna be
enjoying
ourselves.
Uber, buddy.
Yeah, we are Ubering for sure. Yeah, last year I was able to work my connections to get us a couple pretty good seats to Colorado State UNLV, and we left in the third quarter. So
there you go.
But I think, look, if you want to just play the simple route, Boise State wins out, they're getting the Group of Five bid. I don't care what Army does. I don't care what Navy does. Yes, they could both beat Notre Dame. I think Boise State, the way that they look right now, if they win out, I think they'll get the G5 bid. If they lose on Friday, or, of course, lose the Mountain West Championship, which was essentially eliminate them from getting in because you have to be your conference champ, that's where it gets interesting. And, you know, you got Tulane. You've got Memphis. You've got Army. You've got Navy. You have maybe UNLV, but they've got two losses already. It's really, really going to be fun.
So let's talk about what we got coming up on the program. We will get into kind of big thoughts from last weekend. We will do our awards during the next segment. Then we will get into the list, get into maybe some Monday Night Football. Of course, it's NBA opening night, and that means that Tim's co-host, big booking from Tim, being able to get his co-host, Jonathan Van Tobel, to join the program. JVT is going to join us. He's already made a bet on the Grizzlies this season. He'll tell us why he likes the Grizzlies in the regular season. We'll preview the entire NBA when he joins us around 3:30. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I've got some research, but I'm gonna lay that to the side for just a moment, because I started thinking about this, and you and I had kind of started talking about it a little bit beyond just what we could see with Navy and with Army. I think one of my big reactions from this weekend, I think all across college football, we're going to miss divisions, because I think we're going to get into a lot of these tiebreaker scenarios and conferences, and we're just going to be like, wait, who's in? And like, are they going to protect the conference championship games? Like, I think we're going to, it's one of those situations that I think everyone had talked about for years. And oftentimes it's usually like the second best team in a division was like, can we just do away with divisions just so that like my team could be good? I think what we're starting to realize is like, yeah, maybe they weren't always even. Like, yeah, you have the Big Ten East, the Big Ten West. Like, it always felt like one division in the SEC was usually stronger than the other, but maybe not the best team in each division was stronger than the other, but it always felt like that. I think we're just going to get to the realize like, oh yeah, there's a reason why the NFL even has divisions. Like, yeah, there's bad divisions and there's good divisions, but there's a reason why we have them.
Look, there's a reality out there, and I don't think it'll play out because it's college football, but there's a reality where the ACC has three unbeaten teams.
Yes.
SMU, Clemson, Miami, they don't play each other.
Well, and Pitt, who's undefeated, but Pitt and SMU do play each other. So one of those two teams could still go undefeated.
Pitt plays Clemson and SMU.
Okay, so yeah.
So if you want to play the chaos card, and I know a lot of people like chaos, we've talked about the Army-Navy scenario, which honestly I think people listening in probably don't want that to happen because that would be detrimental to Memphis's shots to winning the conference championship. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of wackiness out there, and the SEC, I believe, with that result on Saturday with Georgia beating Texas, got a little bit more wacky. Texas A&M quietly. Yeah,
I think the only two remaining unbeaten in league play on Saturday.
LSU and Texas A&M.
Correct.
I'm on A&M.
I am too.
Gig 'em. I didn't like that. There was a group that gave out LSU +3, which I did not love to see. Yeah, you got that.
Look, ooh, a syndicate did?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So that's why it moved down to 2.5. But
hey, good for us.
Yeah. Hey, we get a better
Maybe run. It's a head fake.
What could go wrong? Yeah. As I've stated many times, more tongue-in-cheek, when the line moves against me, I don't think I have ever won. But when the line moves with me, I'm like, 50-50.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, look, the broad spectrum of college football this year, like, ladies and gentlemen, Indiana is undefeated. They lost their quarterback. He might be back for next week's game with surgery today, according to Pete Thamel. But like, Indiana's strength of schedule is hot garbage. I think it's like 108, but they're obliterating everybody. Who in the world would take Nebraska +7? Oh, I did.
We did. It was a good spot.
It was a great spot. Overinflated, and they won 56-7.
It was nice. But to move on, like, you know what I mean. We could, you and I could have moved on. Like, I think when it got to 21-7, and then it flipped to 28, so I was like, all right, I'm good here.
Yeah, the only one that I turned off, and I ended up getting a backdoor push was East Carolina Army.
Yeah, that was heroic.
The thank you, Mike Houston, for your service down there at East Carolina. You got us a push at least there at the end before you got fired from ECU. But look, Indiana is going to be a favorite in every game except Ohio State. And if they lose at Ohio State and they're 11-1, are you going to leave out an 11-1 P4 program? They don't really have a signature win, and they won't because Michigan continues to struggle. But yeah, I mean, there's so many scenarios like this because of the unbalanced schedules that are out there, and how do we look at particular teams moving forward? So, look, I think BYU is the biggest fraud going in college football. Like, but they've got a really good win. They went to SMU and won, and they keep finding ways to win. Friday night's win against Oklahoma State was mind-blowing how they came back and won that game. They were facing a 4th-and-7. They converted it by a yard. Two plays later,
a yard.
Half a yard, maybe
a foot.
Yeah,
the length of the ball. And it was very good spot.
And then 3 plays later, bada bing, bada boom. They're in the end zone. You know, how many times is Miami going to get the fortune of ACC replay? I mean, it's, and this is why I love this sport, man. Some people might be listening, and I know we're in Memphis, so obviously pro college football, which is why I love y'all. But like, it's crazy. This year's nuts, and I love it. I love every second of it.
Okay, so let me play that scenario out with you.
Which one?
When we talk about these teams that feel like they've got the rabbit's foot.
BYU.
Is this, well, I'm Miami, just saying like in general, because
Duke.
Who is the team that, with the exception of people living in the greater Kansas City metro area, who is the team that everyone believes either the fix is in or look at how all the ways they win?
Miami.
Well, I'm just saying in general in the NFL.
Oh, in the NFL, Kansas City.
Okay, the Chiefs. And who did we do that before? Before there were the
Patriots.
Chiefs. What if these teams that just have pretty good quarterbacks in an era in which we don't really have tremendous quarterback play, like what if that's kind of the difference in all these close games? Because like, you know, I'm going to have it as one of my biggest college football moments, Oklahoma State's last defensive possession. I still have no idea how BYU scored, but like at a certain point, it's like, well, they get down to it and the BYU's
Jake Retzlaff.
Retzlaff. He kind of is just a gamer. You know what I mean? And like he gets the big run where it's like everyone's thinking he's going to go out of bounds. He's like, screw it.
Are you going to tackle this guy?
Yeah, it's like, he's like, screw that. If you're not going to tackle me, like I'm going to cut it back and I'm going to get 30 more yards. And then I'm just
kind of like the Mahomes run on Sunday a little bit.
Except I think his was a little bit more honest. Like I think he was going to the sideline and he realized no one was going to tackle him. Mahomes was like using the sideline like, I dare you to hit me. Like,
you know,
Ratzlaff was at least, I think he was
heading, in the middle. He was in the middle of the field.
He was heading to the sideline thinking I'm getting out of bounds. Then he realized there was absolutely nobody there. And so he cut it up and he got more yardage. But then you have the throw, little seam route, and then the tackling, whatnot. But it's like, same thing with Miami. Miami kind of gets in these games and they end up just always coming out on top because why? Well, Cam Ward's just better.
I'll say this about Miami, and it's some of it's tongue-in-cheek, some of it's me being upset that I lost my bet. But you look at the last 3 games that they've played where they've had a fortunate break go their way. I actually think the call on the field in the Virginia Tech game when they called the Hail Mary a touchdown and then the fumble that they called on the field that was returned for a score, then they overturned, I think they were wrong. However, there was not enough evidence to overturn them. Isn't that what we've always been told? Oh, they called it this on the field. They're not going to be able to overturn it. Well, I look at that Miami-Louisville fumble that changed the game. And when you looked at the replay, they called it a fumble. I don't know how you overturn it, but they did. And Miami, you know, ends up playing out the game the way that they did. But I think your overall point is an absolute fair, maybe not as much with Retzlaff, but Cam Ward is one of those guys where I don't know if people have bet against Miami this year or just wanted them to lose. He's one of those guys that is going to be a nightmare. Like betting against Mahomes. Like,
yes.
I bet against Mahomes on Sunday. That sucked.
Guess and he didn't.
Was it the reason? Was he the reason that the Niners lost?
No.
No.
Brock
Steve
Purdy
Spagnuolo
was.
In the defense and Brock Purdy and Brandon Ayuk getting hurt. But like,
Debo.
When you bet against, and he has got pneumonia, when you bet against these types of players, it sucks. It's a pain in the butt. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's funny because the way that I've gambled for however long I've been gambling, right? It's taking the stinky dogs, the smelly lines, all of that. I'm like, you know, maybe I should just bet Indiana Army and Navy and the thing would be easy, you know? Just bet the easy ones.
Well, there's always the reality of the graphic, you know, the graphic that Fernelli always tweets out where he used it with golf, which is like, like sharp bettors on the one hand betting against Scottie Scheffler and then the others, the dummies just being like, I'm just going to take Scheffler every week. And then like everyone else in the middle, it's like, who are the geniuses? Are the geniuses the ones that we would say are the squarest bettors of all time? Well, they had a pretty good year betting on Scottie Scheffler. And then, yeah, you can occasionally bet against Scheffler and win, and then you can maybe get a better payout. But I kind of always, I'm with you. I thread the line of, you don't always want to be square, but there's certain people that I'm like, I'm fine being on the square side of because it feels, when you bet against Mahomes, you feel like an absolute idiot. It's the same way as when you got Saban as an underdog in that SEC championship game and you're like, yeah, I don't care. Georgia's better. Look at the roster. Georgia's better. And then you sit there like 10 minutes into the, like 10 minutes into the second half, you're like, I'm an idiot. Like I would rather bet on Mahomes and lose than the feeling of why did I bet against him? Because then not only did you lose the bet, you just spend the whole day just going, I'm an absolute idiot. Like I deserve everything that's coming to me.
Well, it kind of goes hand in hand where you think about Saturday night and Kirby Smart is, I don't know if he's the new Saban, but he's a guy that, I mean, we talked about it on Friday's show. They made up a blog, didn't they? Like for the TCU game, like they.
I think he made up a message board post.
And they knew that they were an underdog going into Texas, and they loved every second of it. And both you and I, fortunately, were on the right side of calling that one out and saying, I don't know about this. Like, who has Texas beaten so far? They're good. They deserve to be the favorite. But 4.5 seemed a little rich for a guy in Kirby who, in typical Kirby fashion, nobody believed in us. I'm like, I don't know, brother. Maybe you should listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company because we believed in you that you would take care of business on the road to Texas.
Well, I think the other thing that game taught us, much like the NFL, you got to really look at the injury report because what we saw in that game was when Walker and Williams play, I don't think those guys got blocked once all Saturday night.
Absolute game changers.
I mean, yours was in hell. And I know some people are like, oh my God, I can't believe Sark was put Arch in. Like, what does that say? It's like, I think he was literally just trying to give viewers like, hey, here's two sidelines to show like, it. You know, look at what Arch is doing. I think he was like looking for a spark. Arch maybe could run away from some trouble or whatnot. But it's like, you just put him on the sideline to be like, all right, man, like it's going to be one of these nights. Like, you know what I mean? Like take a look at it from the sideline. And I think Sark was also very aware of the fact, like, we can't block them, so we're going to have to figure something out.
And now you think about Georgia and how much do you trust them to win the national championship. I still have my questions. I still have my questions about their offense. I have my questions about Carson Beck. But if the defense is going to play like that, which we hadn't seen all year, partially because of the injuries, I have a hard time envisioning teams beating them, but I think Ohio State and their offensive firepower, Oregon seems to be rounding into form, a team that I was very high on. I mean, once again, I know I sound like a broken record. That's why I think this year with the expanded playoff is going to be tremendous. I mean, we had a long stretch of college football where it was like 2.5 teams could win the title. And I'm not saying that all 12 teams that make the college football playoff will have a chance, but I think Oregon does. I think Ohio State does. I think Texas does. Georgia does. I probably wouldn't put Alabama in there. I'm starting to think maybe they just had an awesome first half of football against Georgia, you know, seeing that they lost to Tennessee. Tennessee's got to figure some stuff out, but they won again, you know? So it's really going to be so interesting to see how this bracket breaks out and what it looks like. And, you know, Iowa State's still undefeated. Do I believe in them? No. BYU's undefeated. Do I believe with them? No. But, yeah, I mean, it's shaping up to be a pretty interesting year. I mean, hell, Penn State's still undefeated, man. Like, I don't really believe in them, but they're still undefeated.
Well, I wanted to go back to your Georgia point, because I kind of find myself wanting to defend Carson Beck. And here's why I would say it.
If he wants to go out and win the Heisman, I'd be cool with that. I'm just saying. I mean, I got a 20-1 on him.
So he's going to get down the stretch. He gets Tennessee and he gets Ole Miss.
Yep. And Florida playing a little better.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite stat lines. Lagway's stat line on Saturday was hilarious. Like, he completed like 7 passes for like 280 yards. That was incredible. Here's where I want to defend Beck. I think Beck's problems are more on the receivers than him, and I know that sounds like loser talk, but I just look at it every single time. He's letting it rip, and I think he's throwing it exactly where he wants to, and guys aren't where they're supposed to be. And then, on top of that, like, I think about that first drive. He came out, he threw in rhythm, he threw kind of fastballs, and it was either guy was in the wrong spot or it just bounced off their hands. When we talk about the unit I don't trust on Georgia, it's actually their receivers. I don't think they've been very good.
I don't disagree at all. And I think back to the interception, the game-clinching interception against Alabama, and where everyone's watching it and being like,
just come back to the ball, dude.
Like, what? You just gave up. Like, it was a fade to the corner. Was it a bad throw? Probably not a great throw, but it's like, fight for the ball. It's the end of the game. So, yeah, I mean, I certainly don't disagree with that. I mean, Carson Beck makes some throws that make you want to, you know, bounce your head off the wall, but he does have a live arm, man.
He's got a live arm, and
I tell you what, though, real quickly,
yeah,
like on another topic for another day, who the hell is QB1 in the draft?
So I'm glad you asked, because I asked this question yesterday. We had Justin Mello on from the Draft Network. So he has Shador and Cam 1 and 2, and they set a big gap. And the guy that's going up the quickest is actually Nussmeier.
Okay, I could actually see that.
I can see it with Nussmeier. People are going to fall in love with the arm.
Cam's turnovers, though, man, can you coach that out? Because he's such a great playmaker, and we've seen that. But, like, I can't get over the throw against Cal.
Well,
some of those games at Washington State, like,
yeah, I think the problem, it's not just the if the interception against Cal exists in a vacuum, you and I could just sit there and go, all right, that was just like an all-time bad decision, whatever. You know, it happens. What we're struggling with is we watched at Washington State, there would be plays where you'd see me like, this kid's incredible. Like, yep. How is this guy not?
Season opener against Colorado State a year ago, they just lit them on fire.
It's like, how is this guy not QB1? And then you would watch like the UCLA game, and he was just throwing it straight to the other team. So I think it's a combination of not just the Cal pick, but it's like we've also seen him when he's not playing with great players around him and when he does try to do too much. I don't know, because that's kind of the fine line. Can you coach it out of him? To a certain,
is Cam Ward really 6'2"?
No chance.
So, I mean, and that's the thing, too, and he's gotten so much better, and he's, you know, at some
shop. I say that as a short guy. I want to be very clear. Like, I defend, there's too much height supremacy in quarterback evaluation, way too much, but there's 0% chance Cam Ward 6'2".
It's kind of funny, because I felt like the collective we were all in on Shador a year ago, and then it was like, I don't know, like, even a buddy of mine texted me, and he's like, if Shador was Shador Smith, would he be the number one quarterback? I'm like, yeah. I'm like,
yeah.
He's got a bazooka.
So I've always questioned,
his vision is there. He's not, I mean,
I think he's a high spin. Okay, so this is the only thing I'd push back on. I think he's a high spin rate guy. So he throws, his spiral
his ball
is so
beautiful.
Pretty.
Beautiful.
It's so, he is, guys that have the Kyler was the same way. Guys that spin it as fast as they do, they just throw an unbelievably pretty ball. I'm not sure, though, if you just, like, put the radar gun on him, I'm not sure he has, like, a bazooka. But what he
that
does...
That Hail Mary against Baylor was so easy.
And see, a lot of that, though, spin, because he can... Like, to put it into layman's terms, like, he throws it with so many RPMs that when it turns over, like, he can throw it really high, and when it turns over, it just drops straight down. And there's that's so hard to do. Like, I don't want it to come across as I'm knocking him for that. Like, that, but it is, I'm not sure, like, he has, like, he's not, like, a Stafford-type arm. Or, you know what I mean? Yeah. But I don't even know if that matters. Like, I've always thought in the NFL, there's, like, a baseline of your arm has to be this good. If your arm's not that good, then you probably can't do it. But you don't have to have Stafford's arm versus Burrow's arm. But you know what I mean? Like, but at the same time, it's like, do I think he can probably has as good of arm as Burrow? Yeah, I do. But like, that's kind of the other thing with Shador is my concerns with Shador are not really playing the position. I just think it's team situationally. Like, can you imagine like if he goes to the Giants and he starts blaming the offensive line? Like, he's just going to get eaten alive in New York.
Well, the conspiracy now, it's not conspiracy. The thought is, now that Tom Brady is involved with the Raiders and he has a relationship with Shador, they'll fire Antonio Pierce. They'll bring in...
Fairness, Antonio's doing a great job of making sure that happens,
well,
too.
Well, I mean, look, man. I mean, who doesn't kick down eight with a minute to go on fourth and goal?
I'll take Tim had plus seven for 500, please, Alex.
I actually didn't bet that game. I should have. It would have been nice to have that.
I did. I'll say this: I had the Rams teased, and that was the classic. Man, I'm glad I made a teaser. You know what I mean? Because like you'd be sitting there just screaming.
There are not many better feelings as a bettor when you put together a two team teaser. By the way, never tease college football people
ever.
Never.
Points are
they are. And you know, before you don't know what you're talking about. I've had bookmakers tell me on many of interviews, they will book your teaser action in a minute. Please, or college football, like they'll take it all day. And it, I know I'm going on a little bit of a you know rant here, but for teasers, just look at how books juice them now. They've changed the juice because it's become advantageous in the NFL. If you're doing a 6-point teaser in college football, it's even money. I say sometimes the line tells the story. The juice tells the story. Books are like, yeah, sure, tease the college football.
Especially in the NFL.
So in the NFL, as you mentioned, those points are so valuable, and there's no better feeling when you have a teaser and it comes home and it lands in that 6-point window.
Oh, yeah.
It makes you feel so good.
It makes you feel so smart. Because I scratched and clawed to get your Commanders the over home. Because I think the true line was 52 or 52.
Did you tease the total?
And so I teased the total under. And when Daniels goes out in the first quarter, you're like, oh my God. Oh my God. Like, you're just like, this is a dead dog loser. Mariota comes in, lights it up enough, and you get 7 points from the Panthers. Oh gosh. That was like the ultimate teaser of like you just felt so smart because if you would have taken the over and if you would have taken the Rams, like you could have easily been the right side. You would have come up short. It's like, oh boy, that's the problem. Back to your original point with Shador. I just think with him, it's going to be, I mean, obviously Deion's even said like, hey, I want him playing like indoors or like I want him playing in warm weather. So like there's that aspect.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready for 3 months of them trying to manipulate where he goes.
Manipulate the market?
I'm not looking for
it. There's a right way to do it. The Mannings say what's up. You do it quietly behind closed doors, and you make sure you don't go to San Diego.
Who doesn't want to go to San Diego?
Eli Manning.
I know. Man.
In fairness, he didn't want to play for the Chargers. I don't know if it was necessarily didn't want to play for...
Fair enough. And it worked out well for your Giants there.
It most certainly did. And then my wife's on a work trip, and she said last night that she had someone in her group try to start a fight that Philip Rivers was better than Eli Manning. And she's like, I wanted him to know I could have fired him.
Also, like, I'm looking up Shador. Shador's 6'2", 215 on the roster. So
I'll say this. If you ask me which one's actually, but if you ask me which guy's 6'2", Shador or Cam, I know which guy I'm betting on. It's Shador.
Yeah, I would lean that way as well. Cam Ward doesn't seem like he's 6'2".
Although I keep wondering, is it because Cam has a shorter neck? Like, I always wonder, like, how much it's... But really what it comes down to is, like, when I see other guys that Cam stands next to, like, he doesn't look taller than him. I'm not just talking, like, the linemen.
By the way, can I... Totally random, it just popped in my head. So Colorado's going to make a bowl game this year.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going to make the playoff. Even though you look at their schedule, they could go 10-2.
It's very much a possibility, because I don't know if anyone's caught what's happened to Utah recently.
No, they're awful. I do think the Cincinnati game this weekend's a little tricky for them, even though they're at home. But is Shador going to opt out, or is he going to play in the bowl game?
I think it depends what bowl game, right?
Like, if they're in the Alamo Bowl, it's a pretty good bowl, right?
Yes, it's a feature spot, prime time.
Yeah. And it's his last game he gets to play for his dad.
I think, honestly, I mean, being a little facetious, but I'm kind of being honest. I don't know.
Is Prime still there?
No, to me, it's gonna be like, I don't know, what kind of NIL opportunities are there in San Antonio? Like, is there money to be made?
Oh, dude, he's making so much money. And if he wanted to, I'm sure he could make more. I bet you Travis Hunter doesn't play because he's banged up now.
Well, Travis is playing this week.
I don't know. His numbers for the Heisman have cratered.
Yeah, it's just
he's like 22-1 now.
Well, he has the unfortunate reality now of like, oh yeah, teams wised up. It's like, hey, if he's on the other side of the field, throw it to the other receivers. Yeah, if he's on the left side, throw it to the right side. Like, let's just not even deal with it. And then, you know, he's just not getting as many reps on offense as he has. Like, so, and like, this was to be expected. The same thing happened last year where he obviously got hurt at a certain point last year, but it's like, as the season goes on, it turns out when you play 130 snaps a game, it kind of takes a toll on you.
So Colorado's lost to Kansas State, so that's a tiebreaker that they wouldn't win. So they kind of need some things.
Who else do they have left, though?
They don't really have much. I mean, they have Cincinnati this week. They're a 5-point favorite at Texas Tech, excuse me, who lost to Baylor by like a million last weekend. Utah, who's all sorts of banged up. Kansas, and then Oklahoma State.
Okay, and then K-State and, all right, who's BYU got left? BYU's got at UCF, at Utah, Kansas, Arizona State, Houston. Who, boy, are they? They're not going to be an underdog the rest of the way either.
Market just flipped today. They're a slight underdog at some shops against 3-4 UCF.
And then, let's see. So then we need Iowa State. Iowa State's remainder is Tech at KU.
Which is neutral, essentially.
Cincy at Utah, Kansas State. Mm-hmm. So you could have, I mean, there's this scenario in play where they have a bunch of one-loss teams and then you're fighting out the tiebreakers. Chaos. This goes back to my whole original point. I think we're going to miss divisions.
Chaos, baby. The Big 12, as anticipated, will be utter chaos. And if you're the Big 12, who's their commissioner?
Oh, God.
Your mark?
Brett Yormark. Mr. ESPN or whatever.
He's going to be trying to figure out a way. If Colorado's got one loss, he's like, how can I get Colorado in this Big 12 championship game? We need to get Colorado.
Are there special commissioner powers?
He's like, I understand the tiebreaker rules, but do you know how good our ratings will be?
Right, but our tiebreakers didn't include what if we have our moneymaker sitting on the side.
I didn't think they would be this good.
All right, so I teased it at the beginning, and we've been talking around it. Okay, I know this is not a perfect stat, but whatever. The AP top two teams this season, straight up, 10-4. They're also 6-8 against the spread. Here are the top two teams' results, regular season only, so this doesn't include playoffs in the championship games where obviously one of them has to lose. You know what I mean? 23, 24-2, 22, 23-2, 21, they were 22-3, in 2020, they were 20-1, shout out to the Alabama Crimson Tide. Those were some of the best kids that have ever lived. You just, whatever the number was, you just laid it. 2019, 23-1. Shout out the 2019 LSU Tigers. Same story. 2018, 23-2. 2017, 19-6. 2016, 21-3. 15, 22-2. 14, 21-3. 2013, 22-2. 2012, 20-4. 2011, 21-2. 2010, it was 21-2. 2009, 23-0. 08, 18-4. Shout out the greatest season of college football, 2007, 16-10. Okay. Everyone always wants to say, is this 2007? Is this 2007? I don't think this is 2007. What I do think this is, though, I think it's close to 2017. And I'll take you back to that year for those that can't remember exactly what happened. This was the year, it was Jalen Hurts' sophomore year, and Auburn had Jarrett Stidham, not Trey Mason. Who was the other back that looked like Trey Mason? He was like new Trey Mason.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't Tank, was it?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think it, no, because Mason was like on those 13, on the 13 teams. But it was the other running back that you just close your eyes like, oh yeah, that's new Trey Mason. So that team knocks off Georgia.
Kerryon Johnson.
Yeah, Kerryon Johnson. That team knocks off Georgia and Bama in back-to-back weeks. Bama was that, they get in as the one-loss non-division champ. Auburn has to go back and play Georgia in the title SEC title game. Kerryon Johnson gets hurt. Georgia kind of waxes them. Georgia gets in as the one. Bama, despite losing to Auburn in the Iron Bowl, gets in as the four. That's the season where we get to the title game. Tua comes in, and they beat Georgia in overtime, second and 26. I think that's the season that this most closely resembles, because I do think we actually can tell there are good teams, but I don't think we have the elite juggernaut team. Each team that I think is that deserves to be in the contender category has an obvious flaw. With the one possible exception, I will say this in defense of your Oregon ticket. If we have a juggernaut, we're at the point now where it's Oregon or it's kind of no one else.
Yeah, and I don't think Oregon's a juggernaut. I think they're really good.
I think they're very good.
Yeah, I would bet against them one of these big boys. You know, going back to 2017, Georgia started that year 15th and made it to the national championship. That was kind of like we're here and we ain't going anywhere season. And they went to South Bend. They won by one. They made the rise up the rankings, and then they got smoked by Auburn. But Auburn, I remember people arguing like Auburn needs to get in. I'm like, dude, they have three losses. Like, don't lose games you're not supposed to lose. Like, they lost to Clemson, they lost to LSU, and then they were the hottest team in the country. They beat Alabama, they beat Georgia, they beat the number one team twice, but they just kind of ran into, you know, Georgia again.
It's what happens when you play the number one team like three times in a row.
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh.
They went 2-3, which is impressive, but.
And then they lost to UCF in the bowl game.
Yeah. And then, like, that, I think that.
That wasn't the UCF. That wasn't the UCF.
No, that's. I want to say that's before Frost. Maybe that was. Yeah. No, I think that's the year that they claimed the national title.
Yeah, 13-0. Yeah,
because Frost coached the bowl game despite being the Nebraska coach.
That's right.
And then the next year was Heupel's year.
Yeah. They beat Memphis in that thriller in the
end of the year. I mean, that game was an absolute track meet. So my answer is I think this most closely resembles 2017. All right, let's take a look at the week that was. We've got our awards coming up from the week. We'll do that next. Also get into the list and JVT with us during hour number two. Stick around and listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Program is brought to you by our good friends at Birdie. It's October, but that also means that it's Golftoberfest at Birdie's. That means that you can book online and enjoy half off standard golf rates all month long. Golfatbirdies.com is the website to book your tee time today. Also, don't forget about the membership options. $100 a month gets you 100, or should say $100 a month gets you 10 hours on the simulators. Normal rates are about $45 per hour. Also, follow them on Instagram for the latest updates and more at Birdies901. All right, let's get into our awards. Let's start first with Team of the Week. Is there any way in your mind that it is not Georgia?
I was going to say honorable mention Indiana for winning 56-7, but yeah, it's got to be Georgia. You go on the road against Texas, you know, people are questioning Georgia. There were discussions, oh, you know, if they lose this game, they may not make the playoff. Yeah, they silenced that pretty quick. And they put that game to bed. And Kirby Smart, you know, not only playing up the no one believed in this card, but the refs were against them and the conspiracy theories were out there. But team of the week, no doubt, Georgia. Slight honorable mention to those Indiana Hoosiers for making me look like a complete and utter buffoon.
I also would give two other honorable mentions. Obviously, the Tennessee Vols.
Yeah,
I think what was impressive for them is you can kind of tell what their formula is going to be, which is they're not going to be able to hit the explosives against quality teams like they had been in the early part of the season. But where I give them all the credit in the world, their defense was put in some bad spots. And their defense, time after time after time, kept rising to the occasion. And that allowed them to kind of figure it out on offense. And they put up 24 points in the second half. I honestly thought, like, listen, I thought it was going to be a lot closer for Alabama to get to 30 points than it was for them to get to 20 points. I was dead wrong on that. We can discuss that. But I think Tennessee deserves some credit there. And then I was just kind of, I think LSU and A&M are similar teams in this. I know A&M doesn't cover last week. If you watched that game, that was the classic couple of boneheaded mistakes when they were going down to cover and put the game away, couldn't do it, and the Mississippi State just plays really hard. And credits Mississippi State for literally not quitting on the season when it would have been so easy to absolutely quit on the season.
Do you have a lot of Mississippi State fans?
Yeah, we got a decent amount, yeah.
All right. Can you guys bring it this week? Bring the cowbells. I took Mississippi State +7 against Arkansas. I like the way they're playing. They've covered three straight games. To your point, man, they could have just quit on the year.
And they haven't. And Van Buren's getting better as he gets more and more reps. And Lebby's
put up your eights, man. The Van Buren boys are rolling.
So dumpster fire of the week. There were a few out there. I wanted to note this one because I have some USC fans for my group chat. You know, that's the thing. You can go to, if you're from LA, you can go to Pepperdine and still root for either UCLA or Pepperdine or USC. And the amount of fire everyone, and they weren't just talking about the coaching staff, they were talking about the administration that got them out of the Pac-12, that they were talking about the athletic director, like everyone involved. Like, we literally just blew everything up to go and lose at Maryland. There were some delicious posts that I was just like, or messages that I was just saving. So I thought that one was great. Oklahoma, when you get Seth Luttrell and his post game on Saturday, that was like basically like delivering like a post mortem. Sounded like either the guy knew he was getting fired or was expecting to get fired, and he was basically just like, "I love this university. Let me tell you all the things that are going wrong." I thought that was like a nice little delicious dumpster fire. And then, of course, you just have Auburn in general. I thought about maybe adding like a new category of what dumb thing did Hugh Freeze say this week. And we found out this week that he's been getting texted by his friends, which is also another tell. Anytime Hugh says, a player saw me in my office or I just got a text, he's letting you know that he's lying. But he's about to say something that's gone through his head, but not exactly something that's happened. He's just been too honest with the media. He's been too transparent. Just telling y'all what's happened, that's what's gotten him in trouble. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's just been throwing his kids under the bus. It's the fact that he's been too transparent. That's the problem.
I'll throw in Florida State's offense into the dumpster fire. I decided last minute to take Florida State plus +3 because Duke is an absolute fraud. And they proved that they were fraudulent. They had 10 first downs, 180 yards of offense, and one by a touchdown.
And I think of the 180, how many came on that one run?
Oh, yeah.
That game was so infuriating because you can tell which side I was on as well.
They were minus -4 in the turnover margin. They can't figure out which quarterback to play. DJ Uiagalelei is, you know, the least of their worries. And Duke, for I think the first time in
22, or is there,
since
they were 0-22.
The ACC, is that right?
They were 0-22 lifetime. Now they're now 1-22.
Yeah, it's just like Florida State. I give credit to their defense for at least trying. And I thought their defense was better than was deserving of that. And yeah, so Duke is somehow 2-0 in the ACC, coming back from 20 against North Carolina in the second half and beating Florida State in a game they were plus +4 in the turnover margin. But Florida State, man, I just don't get it. How are you this bad? You know, like,
I mean, I've always thought Florida State is one of those schools that if you strike out like portal, or if like when the going gets tough at Florida State, it's a lot of guys that are kind of mercenaries, and it's kind of always been that way. And so when it starts to crumble, it crumbles really quickly. It doesn't mean the program's dead, but
no,
you know what I mean?
It's not dead, but like, I like Mike Norvell as a coach, but I'm looking at it and I'm like, man, was last year the outlier? Like, it's certainly starting to feel that
way.
Well,
it's starting to be the question of how much of it was Norvell's system and how much of it was Jordan Travis.
Yeah. I mean, and I also like, you look at the quarterbacks on that roster and they're not power four quarterbacks. Like DJ Uiagalelei last year, I mean, I get it. He was a five-star recruit. And the best games of his career were the first two games of his career, essentially, right? Boston College, when he stepped in for Lawrence, and then the game at Notre Dame in the COVID season. I mean, outside of that, he's been a disappointment pretty much everywhere he's gone.
Well, I think my boy Jonathan Smith got the most out of him, which he realized, hey, you got to keep it simple for him. Like, run the football and then have it play action.
Beasts of running backs. Yes. I mean, Miami's running back was on Oregon State's roster a year ago.
Yeah, and it was,
and
hey,
they still lost four games, by the way.
They were, but like, he looked, one of those losses was after Smith basically told the whole world, I'm going to Michigan State. And it was, you know, play action shots where he's throwing to open guys, just hit him. Don't ask him to sit back in the gun and try and read the whole field. Like, that's just not what he's built to do. All right, let's go to our Heisman Award winners. I'm stealing from you, from what you did back at the Oklahoma game. Just Georgia's entire defensive front. I mean, what they did to Texas, and that's a good offensive line, and they made them look like it was an FCS offensive line.
Yeah, it was very, very impressive. You know, I'm gonna give some love to the two quarterbacks of Army and Navy. Bryson Daly, who is actually starting to show up on some Heisman boards, 7 of 10 through the air, 147 yards, ran for 171 yards against East Carolina. And then Blake Horvath, who's going to be my enemy this week, he just continues to ball out every single game. He ran for only 56 yards, but threw three touchdowns.
He had to save his legs.
Of Charlotte. And I don't know if you saw the pick six Navy had, where the dude at the end of the game, he looked like, if anyone's seen the episode of The Simpsons when Nelson Muntz is the quarterback and he takes Bart and he's his like blocking dummy,
yes,
and there's a guy,
yes,
on the goal line and he runs and knocks him over. That's what he did to Charlotte's quarterback on the goal line. He just trucks.
He had a chance. He saw.
He could have run around him. He just ran right into him.
I just don't know if I'm comfortable living in this world where Army and Navy quarterbacks are throwing 10 to 13 times a game.
It's weird. It's very odd. Very odd.
That also shows you, that might be some coaches trying to get bigger jobs. The most college football moment of the week, as Tim had mentioned, if you haven't seen Oklahoma State's last defensive possession against BYU, that was special. Because on the one hand, I didn't actually think Oklahoma State did anything wrong in terms of game management. They kind of burned one timeout, but it's like, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, they had to score. I think the closest thing you could say is maybe Presley should have gone down instead of scoring, and they could have first and goal. But they left very little time on the clock for BYU, and I still have no idea how – I have no idea how they hit the – not the fourth down pass. That was just kind of throw it up. Guy goes up top, makes the catch. But there was like a seam route that they hit, and then the touchdown pass, and then the run. That was some of the finest college football defense I've ever seen from Oklahoma State.
All right, I got two for you. Number one, going back to Florida State and Duke, did you see Waffle House guy?
Yeah, love that guy.
So Waffle House guy, I did a segment on my morning show about it, and shouts to my friend Dawn Davenport, who was doing the sidelines.
She did heroic journalistic work.
She was incredible. She found out who this guy was, his whole story. So it was just one of those sleepy Friday games at Duke, and you see this dude shirtless, I think rocking cargo shorts, had a headset on, and was pretending to call plays, and the laminated sheet that he was calling plays off of was...
the Waffle House menu.
A Waffle House menu.
And this is why I don't think... I think Southerners understood why this was such important work. Every single guy I know that has ever played football or played Madden, every time they go to Waffle House and they get the menu, they view it as a play sheet. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this since I was like 12. You've got your third down calls. You know, that's kind of more, that's more the like the all-star special selections. Like, it's kind of the staples. But then you got your trick plays. Sometimes you got to flip the menu over. You can't sleep on the burger at Waffle House. It's not that bad.
Ooh,
I'm telling
I don't know
you,
if I've ever had it.
Can't sleep on that. There's other options, but those are like your, you know, those are your gimmick plays, your gadget plays. That's your wildcat stuff. That's the backside of the menu.
And the other one was, who doesn't love a good rant? And I sent this over to you.
I did not have time to edit it.
I just tacked it on the podcast unedited. I'm going to read you it, and I'll leave out the Jim Mora Jr., head coach of UConn. Huskies were battling back against Wake Forest, and there was a missed call. I'm proud of them for fighting back. We've got to make sure we put ourselves in a position where it doesn't come down to one play, where an ACC team makes a horse bleep call against an independent. And that's up to us to play better at the start of the game so it doesn't come down to that call, which was holding and PI. And that's what I told them. And we'll come back and we'll fight. It's on us to play better earlier, but it sure would be nice if it was a level playing field. And then asked a question. He goes, yeah, it was a hold and PI. Hold and PI. Here's your explanation. ACC versus independent.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.